This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
I grew up thinking, you know, hard work was a privilege. Like the opportunity to go work was something that you're lucky to do. I say that and it sounds so simple, but I can't wait to get after whatever objective or goal that I've set out. And I completely attribute that to my parents and their work ethic.
Welcome to the Color Money Podcast. I'm Bo Minchiti, and I'm joined by two of my fabulous co-hosts, Julia Lachey and Imrik Peace. And today, we have an amazing guest joining us, Dwight Stevenson. He's a principal at Blue Vista. He was responsible for overseeing the firm's new business development functions. He originates real estate transactions and investments. He's got an amazing career, and he's been involved with over $3 billion worth of real estate deals and transactions. I've had the opportunity to get to know Dwight a little bit, and he's passionate about paving the way for others in the investment space, especially people from our community. He actually also serves at the University of Notre Dame's advisory board on the Fitzgerald Institute of Real Estate, where he's teaching and giving back. He's an active investor, a visible leader in this space, an all-around great guy. So we're excited to have him here today to really focus on the principles of investment, but also leadership in the space of real estate and wealth building. So thanks for joining us, Dwight.
Happy to be here.
So maybe just to kick it off, tell us a little bit about your story. How did you get to be in the real estate investment space? Like, what led you there? Maybe just a little bit about some of the key instrumental components of your life that brought you to where you are today.
I always knew I wanted to be in real estate, and that's because both of my parents were in real estate. So I grew up seeing what was possible in the space. So there really wasn't a point throughout my kind of adolescence and, you know, older years where I didn't think I would be in the real estate space. So when I was young, I saw my parents start a construction company where they built all commercial projects, mainly municipal projects, schools, libraries, city halls in South Florida, mainly in the Miami-Dade and Broward County areas. And from that perspective, the ones that seemed within the real estate space at the time from a general contractor that seemed like they were having all the fun were the developers. So when I was very young, my first goal was to be a developer one day. So be a real estate investor, but an investor that took on somewhat speculative risk to some degree, but ultimately, if the project and projects were successful, the financial reward was pretty significant. So I ended up graduating from the University of Notre Dame, went to work with my parents as a general contractor. And my goal at the time was to hopefully take over their business one day, years down the road, but one day nonetheless. And also along the way, start to incorporate real estate as an investment part of the company, as opposed to just being a service provider and building the real estate for a fee. But that quickly changed course. The person I was dating at the time decided that she didn't want to be in South Florida, and she wanted to eventually move back to the Midwest, particularly the Chicagoland area. So that threw a wrench in my plans to eventually continue to work with my parents and eventually take over their business. So I spent several months doing a lot of coffee chats and meeting with people within the real estate sector, because I knew I wanted to stay in the space, to just get a picture of what other opportunities there were available. So, you know, the conclusion of all of that, or the coffee chats and the conversations I was having, was that I wanted to be in the real estate investment space, particularly on the commercial side. And I wanted to do larger institutional size investments, real estate investments in particular. And the place to start down that path was to be a financial analyst at either a company that owns and operates those assets or a service provider that sells and brokerages the sale of those assets, or go to business school and learn the financial underwriting piece. So ultimately, I landed a gig at JLL, formerly known as Jones Lang LaSalle, started off as an assistant general manager within their property management division. And that lasted for about a year and a half down in South Florida. And then at the conclusion of that, ended up transferring within their brokerage business that focused on investment sales of large institutional sized single tenant net leased assets, and then worked my way from an analyst all the way through to running a transaction deal team doing brokerage. And then for the last 6 years, roughly, I've been at this company, Blue Vista Capital Management, which is headquartered in downtown Chicago. So I focus on our joint venture equity platform, where I handle acquisitions, and we search the country for the best value add and development deals to invest in.
Just jumping back a little bit, like you sort of glossed through this piece, but you talked about your parents a little bit and you talked about going to Notre Dame, but I also think football was a big part of your life and yes. Your dad's life, right, too? So you spent a lot of time learning and absorbing from your family a lot of things that shaped you. Has what you observed in your family and some of those values shaped how you operate? And how are you trying to pass that on? I know you have kids and a family yourself. So how do you think about the role of family in business and in your journey?
Sure. Well, I was fortunate and really blessed to have a family and parents that were, one, very successful. And they spent a lot of time and energy, you know, focusing on my brother and I and my sister and making sure that, you know, we saw their values and the principles that they operated in. And so, you know, I'd say hard work was one of the first ones that, whether I wanted to or not, I was going to learn from my parents. And so I grew up thinking, you know, hard work was a privilege. Like the opportunity to go work was something that you're lucky to do. I say that and it sounds so simple, but I can't wait to get after whatever objective or goal that I've set out. And I completely attribute that to my parents and their work ethic. And some might say it's a little extreme. They usually work 6 to 7 days a week still. You know, it's something that they have a lot of pride in and they enjoy. Also, reputation, our name, and to some extent, your legacy, but also the reputation at that point. Don't tarnish your name. And that plays out in, you know, do what you say you're going to do. That plays out in making sure you don't embarrass yourself, you don't embarrass your family. And also, you know, try to do things that are unusual. In some cases, can be great. So one of the things that I never doubted was that if there was anything I could set my mind to, I could accomplish it. Mm-hmm. And so I had this sort of no limits mindset. And my father, he was able to, you know, reach a level within, you know, the NFL. He's considered one of the best centers, pro football centers of all time, depending on who's measuring it. He's top three. And he got inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1998. But to see someone that was tangible, that I can touch and talk to and see that, okay, he was able to be the best of all time, right? And he bleeds like everyone else. He works hard. He's focused. So what made him different? And then what things could I incorporate into my life to accomplish a similar level of success, but focused on, you know, whatever it is that I want to, you know, concentrate on. And then my mom was instrumental as well, because my dad, while a little bit more of a big dreamer, have a vision and staying focused, she was very good at execution, right? Let's break this down to, you know, the simplest components and what needs to be done and being very organized. So my mother and father worked together pretty much their entire professional career beyond the end of, once my father finished the NFL. My mother's an attorney and they partner in the construction businesses as well as all of the other businesses and properties that they've invested in over the years. And so their sort of tag team duo was a great complement, because where he was weak, my mother was strong. And when it came to the vision and thinking bigger and making yourself, you know, setting your objectives a little bit uncomfortable, you know, my dad was squarely there. And then my dad was vigilant about not being distracted.
I hear you talk about your parents a lot, right? Yes. The amount of pressure that puts on one or could put on one to perform at a level. And then you go into this space as an adult where you're clearly the uber minority. You know, that seems like that's something that mentally you have to manage a certain way, mainly the part as you're an adult, as you're a child, and you're going through this uber pressure, you're going through this pressure of performance with your family because it's like, these folks are really good. And I have to live up to this. And then you go into, again, being the uber minority as a professional. How does that force you to lead yourself perform?
The way that I sort of reacted to it, which is, I don't think one way is better or worse, was one, my father reached a level of such high success that I never, when I said there's no limits, it was no limits in where I set my target and path to. I did not think I had to play football, or nor was there an expectation that if I played football, that I needed to then be the best at whatever position. It was more a matter of he was able to do it and it's possible, but not he was able to do it and not the way. Let's see, you're either in the Hall of Fame one day or you're not. So that's how I took it, sort of external to me, but it was more inspirational and it's possible. So then how does that kind of transfer and carry over to work? I focus always on having very clear goals and objectives. And then the faith that if I had the right steps to then accomplish those goals and objectives, that I could 100% accomplish those objectives. It was more a matter of time. And what I saw from my parents, what I, you know, the things that I tried to incorporate were, what did they do to help them reach those levels of success? And then with other people that I talked to, mentors, friends, family that have reached similar levels of success, what are they doing? And then what parts can I incorporate, can I use and leverage to help me get to my goal and objective? Because every, you know, I'm different than my father. His circumstances were what they were at the time. My circumstances are different and your circumstances are different. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of playing the hands that you're dealt. So I truly believe in a plan, in a strategic plan, but it all starts with setting goals and objectives. So that's kind of the formula that I have the most faith in. And that's where I get my psychological comfort. It was never really uncomfortable. It's always been inspirational for me. So being in an environment where I am an uber minority from a diversity standpoint, it doesn't really come up because for me as an issue or a challenge, because I coded that into my business plan, right? Why you're not going to, like, culturally, you're not going to fit in as much. You know, you're not going to look like everyone else. I might not get in the beginning. May I have gotten invited out to whichever happy hour, or maybe I might not make the most friends. That wasn't in my business plan. What was in my business plan was to be a top producer. What was in my business plan was whatever metric was the lead, was how do I achieve that lead metric? And then anything outside of that was more of not necessarily a distraction, but it wasn't something that I really keyed in on or focused on.
Kind of building on this, if you've been listening for the last, whatever, 15 minutes, you probably got some sense of the sort of intentionality and structure in the way that Dwight approaches life. I actually find it really interesting because his job is head of business development, right? And especially in the real estate, like, brokerage industry, we think of, like, business development people as being, like, bubbly and all over the place. And, you know, and so I'm interested, Dwight, in, like, as a person who in the business of creating relationships and going out and finding and cultivating new relationships, how have you applied that sort of intentionality, that business plan mentality, that I've got a plan and it doesn't really matter what happens, I'm following the plan. How have you used that? Because Emmerich always tells us that our network is our net worth and that the relationships we build are what build us. And you're somebody who does that as your job. And I think it'd be really interesting to hear about that from your approach and personality and behavioral style, how you go about building those relationships.
To provide some context, so in the joint venture equity business vertical that I sit in, our primary objective is to invest passively into real estate transactions with individuals that are companies that we call real estate operators, real estate operating companies. We're providing majority of the equity, taking majority of the economic risk. The general partner is taking less economic risk, but they're taking on more sweat equity risk, and they're in charge of identifying the investment, coming up with the business plan, and then ultimately, once we're invested in the investment, executing the business plan. And Blue Vista sits back, and we just are hoping to get our money back over the life of the investment, and ultimately, once we sell it, you know, dividing the profits and then, you know, going on to fight another day. So we do that over and over again. So we do that 30 times a year. We've done it over 250 times over the last 20 years. And so that's our business. We rely on those general partners. So we're essentially, we're betting on horses. And so we want to make sure we're betting and investing with good operators, people that have strong values that align with Blue Vistas, principles that align with Blue Vistas, people that aren't going to do things that don't have a track record of doing things that are illegal, or in our industry, what we would call bad acts, anything nefarious, and also have a track record of being successful. We want to invest in that kind of top quartile of real estate operator across the country in the investment types and investment strategies that we find most compelling at the time. So that's a backdrop. So I'm going around the country, engaging with general partners, trying to figure out who's got those characteristics, who are the good people, who's got good track record, you know, who aligns with Blue Vista's values, and then ultimately, do we like the actual investment itself? So I'm generally trying to check those four boxes. So how I do it in terms of like systematically, the databasing is very important. So an approach. So I'm trying to spend the least amount of time, but get the most amount of output. And so I'm trying to spend time with the general partners across the country that are most likely to have those characteristics. And then when I'm spending time with them, I also need to convince them that Blue Vistas, the company that they also want to allow to invest in their transaction, because ultimately, if they don't choose us as an investor, then we don't get our capital out. So we need to convince them. So that's another thing that I'm doing. I'm not only trying to vet general partners, but I'm also trying to win them over on the Blue Vista side. And it's good that they like me, but they also need to like our company as well. And so it's important that Blue Vista has an excellent track record. You know, have we done what we said we're going to do? Have we not done anything illegal? You know, like everything that you'd want a financial investor. And so that's another thing that I'm bringing with, you know, the conversations that I'm having with individuals. So databasing is important. And then ranking, having a system of being able to parse out and through and divide the people that we're most likely to be able to transact with based on some of the criteria that I just described, and then the ones that we're less likely to transact with. And then once that gets divided out, I focus all of my energy on, you know, the top quartile of individuals that have those characteristics that also are most likely to invest alongside Blue Vista, because we serve a certain segment of the real estate market, and it tends to be real estate operators that are formed, have experience, but they don't have the best access to capital yet. So I'd say where I have applied that sort of intentionality is on how I'm vetting who I'm spending my time with, so that I have the highest odds of being of that incremental minute that I'm spending with one company versus another company is more likely to, you know, return, you know, be converted into a transaction. And then once that's dialed in, I actually really enjoy getting to know people that have been, you know, successful, people that have started businesses, people that are passionate about real estate, passionate about a deal that they're trying to describe and pitch, you know, to us. I feed off of that. So that part's actually really easy for me. I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm putting myself in position to be most, to be able to convert on that conversation. But once that conversation is in place, the rest is actually very easy and enjoyable. For
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
Me.
One of the things that has been a commonality on this podcast to me that I've observed, one, you started your conversation with stories about your parents, the foundation, right? Your foundation of how you came to be. And there's been a consistency with, we typically have some high net worth individuals, very highly successful people on this podcast. And the commonality that I've observed tends to be that people start off by talking about they had this family structure. And so this podcast in particular, the Color of Money podcast, is about how to help people, all people, but specifically people of color, Black people, earn more, learn more, and build wealth. And I've noticed over the last almost 100 episodes that many of the people who are highly successful, especially the men, have come from really strong formed families, which, again, I sound like a broken record, but that is not necessarily the norm in the Black community right now. And Bo mentioned that I like to play the novice on this podcast, but really that what I bring is a different perspective for the people who are listening that says, oh, Dwight's story is great, and I don't have nothing in common with a Dwight or a Bo or, I have nothing in common with any of these high capacity people, other than the fact, Dwight, that my parents also graduated from Notre Dame. But, other than that, we walked way different lives. How do I become someone like Dwight without coming from this silver spoon, if you will, family structure that many of our guests have come from and not had challenges that many of us on the other side of the world have to overcome just to make income, just to get over tragedies in life? How do we connect the dots? And I'm saying all this, I'm going on the soapbox because I have a soapbox that I believe where we need to begin our wealth journey is with restructuring and solidifying the importance of our family structures. You said something that stood out to me about being very careful who you partner with in life, right? And so to me as a single woman, and this speaking to many other single women, and I mentor a lot of young women, is being very mindful of who you partner yourself with to ever even have your children have the potential to become a Dwight. He wasn't overwhelmed by his parents. He saw that as something he could be. But when we're starting with this conversation, particularly for the young ladies listening, Dwight starts with vetting who you spend your time with, right? Dwight starts with who you partner with in life. The baseline is we really got to start focusing on who we spend our time with, partnering with the right people, building stronger structures in our families so that our families are actually families, not single women households raising children, and so that we have the opportunity to not just meet a Dwight, be a Dwight, raise a Dwight, but we all have the opportunity to be whatever we want to be and see that. So I heard something totally different than what Bo probably heard, but that's the value that my perspective brings to this podcast is it sounded like, it was so far removed from what I'm looking at out of my window of these people in this community right now, that is even, an idea to start back with some of the foundational things you've said, which started with your family structure.
I have benefited from being extremely lucky. Having the parents that I had growing up, in South Florida, also psychologically being able to be around a lot of successful people, but not be intimidated by it. Me, one, use it as a motivation, but also say, hey, guys, show me the playbook. And I was not a great academic student, but I became an academic after I graduated college because I understood how important it was to build skills. I was fortunate to get a football scholarship to Notre Dame. And so I had success on the field, but I didn't have as much success as I could have had. And that was considered a failure to me. And so I spent a few years after college focusing on what went wrong. And there was a tremendous amount of introspection. So when it came to sports, I was a lot of times bigger, stronger, faster than most people. So I didn't have to be as technically sound because I could just overwhelm someone. You could do that as you're an adolescent. You could do it through high school. You can do it in some cases in college. You can't do that in the pros at all, 0%. And so as much as it sounds like I'm, intentional and methodical, I actually became more of this way after college than when I was in college and younger. And so, but I figured that out through introspection, and no one did that. That was something that I kind of just did on my own, but introspection is huge. So like, that's another skill that I don't know how that gets taught and taught well and efficiently, but being able to get feedback and then have that feedback, if it's a course correction that's needed, you have the tools and the environment and the network around you to help you course correct so that you start doing behaviors that reinforce the direction you are trying to go. But then when I was a kid, through college, I always had someone setting goals for me. My parents would set goals for me, right? You got school, and then in sports and athletics, you got coaches, you got university. All these people are setting goals for you. I just happened to do well in those environments where there's a clear goal. But after I graduated, I was in this environment where no one was setting goals for me anymore. I was trying to grasp for, how do I reach greatness again? And so that's what led me down this introspective path. And then I had to figure out how to be a goal-setting oriented person myself. And then once I worked that system into how I operated, I was able to kind of, you know, reinvigorate myself and then get after things. So I didn't always operate that way. So that's one. And then the other thing is, so one of the things that I'm personally working on with some partners is called the Agage Program. And so about 2 years ago, I got a call from my cousin. His name's Joe Stevenson. And he called me because he was having to retire from the Army. What was unique was he had graduated from West Point about a year prior to that. And when he was at West Point, he played football. He suffered an injury, which led to a back surgery and two hip surgeries. So by the time he called me, the medical staff for the Army basically gave him two options. You could either retire with pro rata benefits, or you can work a desk job. Because after you graduate West Point, there's an obligation to serve in the Army. And he decided he didn't want to work a desk job. And so when he was calling me, he said, I need some career advice because my plan was to be in the Army for a decade plus, go to law school after that, work for a law firm, and then be a senator one day. That was his 20 to 30 year, you know, professional plan, which was, you know, maybe not reach be a senator, but everything before that was very achievable. And so while he was in college, didn't do an internship, which if anyone's listening to this is in college, internships are incredibly important. He didn't do an internship and he majored in political science, which is fine if you're planning on going to law school one day, but any other career, particularly in business, it doesn't carry as much weight when it comes to interviewing, putting yourself in a very strong position for any type of like a financial job. And so I responded to him by saying, had you considered commercial real estate as a sector at all? And he said, no. And so I said, okay, I'll tell you my story and why I liked the sector, but I need you to have, you know, more conversations with other people within the industry, but also in other industries as well. And then come back to me and let me know, you know, what you think. And because if real estate is an area where you think you want to pursue a career, I can help you. And the closer you get to what I'm doing, the more I'm able to assist you. So he comes back to me after a few weeks of conversations and says, Dwight, I want to do what you do. And essentially, I want to be in real estate private equity. And the way you start in real estate private equity is essentially you're a financial analyst. That's an entry-level position. And so we set our sights at that point, and I gave him some disclaimers because I only knew one way to go and get it and to get a very difficult. What he was asking for was hard, just given his background. West Point's great, but he just didn't have he didn't major in finance. He didn't have some of the prerequisites that a lot of financial analysts have when they're applying to jobs at like a Blackstone. So I said, all right, we're going to set our sights. Our goal is to get a financial analyst job at Blackstone within the next 8 to 12 months. And so most people would hear that and be like, you're crazy. That's not realistic. But that's fine. That's their initial reaction. But then it's, okay, well, what would it take? Okay. So we then said, okay, what would it take? That's the plan we operated off of. Fortunately, 6 months later, roughly, he accepted a position as a financial analyst, not at Blackstone, but at a company called Artemis, which is, you know, a very sizable real estate private equity company based in the Washington, D.C. metro area. And he would get the equivalent training as being at a Blackstone. And so to do that in less than 4 months is hard, but not as hard when you're dealing with someone that's in the industry that can just tell you, here's the what you need to focus on. And also he approached it with a tremendous amount of effort, because if I pointed at a wall and I said, run through that wall, he was going to run through that wall. Like, that's the level of faith and trust that he had in me. But also he was motivated. He's like, I want to be where you are. Like, if that's what it takes, I got to run through that wall. If I got to jump off this building, I'm just going to jump. And so he had that level of faith, and then, you know, paired that with a tremendous amount of work ethic. And so when he started, though, I said, Joe, I need you to journal everything we do over the next few months. And I just said, just journal it. The reason why I asked him that was, I didn't explain this to him, because what him and I did is not unusual for someone that's a senior executive in the real estate private equity space or any other, you know, production type real estate role, but it normally happens once or twice or maybe three times. And it's usually most of our industry are, you know, white guys. It's usually a white guy with a fraternity brother's son that is the person that needs to get the job, or a relative of his, and then he doesn't do it again. He or she doesn't do it again. Well, we're never going to get our numbers up from a diversity standpoint if people like myself don't just do it once with my cousin Joe, but I need to do it times 10. So that's why I was having him journal it, because I would have basically wanted to give these answers to someone else. But the other challenge was, I can't just giving someone, here's the playbook, doesn't work if they don't bring the right energy and effort. And so that was something that I eventually solved in the process of solving for, and that's what the Agage program is doing. We're essentially going to place 99 more, we call them potential rainmakers, into the commercial real estate space over the next 4.5 years. And so why 100, and that's plus Joe, is because by that time we would have gotten all of our systems right, and then essentially we'll be able to scale to 1,000 beyond that. And we're focused on targeting D1 athletes specifically. For us, what we're trying to deliver are more rainmakers, so people that are producing revenue in commercial real estate businesses. So that could be a brokerage business, that could be an investment business. I don't have the research to support this, but just from my perspective and opinion, that's one area where diversity has had the least amount of success. I feel like we've had more success in operational type roles, but not ones where they are more either eat what you kill or where it's all performance based. But those rainmaking production roles, a lot of times when you are successful, those are the quickest paths to being a senior executive. Those are the quickest paths to having a balance sheet, you know, having enough net worth to be able to start your own company, or to be able to, you know, if your company does something that you don't like, you have the ability to walk, right? You have more leverage, and you just don't get that type of upside in operational roles at the same level of scale.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Dwight. I think we've had a great journey today on the power of intentionality and goal setting, and the way in which who you partner with and who you select to partner with matters. We're out of time now, but I want to leave, I think our listeners are just playing back something you just said, that if you can set a goal and you have the trust, motivation, tangible examples, clear steps, and faith, and you give 100%, that unlocks an entire world of possibilities. And I think as we do this podcast, we're trying to give different examples of people that can provide some of that motivation, tangible examples, and clear steps, so that as people find their own trusting community and their own faith they have in themselves and give 100%, they can accomplish what they want to accomplish. So thank you for joining us today. It's been great having you, and wish you all the best.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.